Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Charles Kupchan, who was Director of European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He's now a Professor of International Affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and he spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as Special Assistant to President Obama for National Security. And he is the author of Power in Transition, The Peaceful Change of International Order, and How Enemies Become Friends, The Sources of Stable Peace. Welcome to Background Briefing, Charles Kupchan.
Good to be back with you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Charles. And do you share my concern, and it's been expressed by others, that the president in a rally in Montana the other day was talking about how he's going to get along great with Putin and Putin's not a problem and it'll all be fixed. And it's similar to what he said about Kim Jong-un, you know, that just personal meetings are what it takes, and if you get on well with somebody, suddenly, by extension, the countries get on well with each other. Obviously, there's an immense amount of naivety in that, but is there also a kind of hidden agenda here where if Trump is able to say that Russia is not a threat, or at least pretend that Russia is not a threat, and say how great I got on with Putin and how we can just solve all these problems, wouldn't that also lead to Trump making a case that we don't need NATO?
Well, you know, Trump is not someone who has gone out of his way to build relationships with anybody, except perhaps his children. And if you look at his foreign contacts, he seemingly built a friendship with Macron. But that didn't go anywhere. Macron had invited him to Paris for Bastille Day. It looked like he had built a strong relationship with Abe, the president of Japan, prime minister of Japan, but that didn't do Abe much good when it came to North Korea. So there's really, in my mind, only one exception to this pattern of Trump essentially kind of ignoring his foreign counterparts, and that is Putin. From the very beginning, he has talked about him as someone he admires. During the campaign, he seemed to show a special favoritism for Putin. Now he's heading off to Europe. He's probably going to make a hash of the NATO summit, just as he did at the G7 summit in Canada, and then go off and have a buddy-buddy heart-to-heart talk with Putin. Why he feels this way toward the president of Russia, what perhaps the Russians have on him, we don't know and we may never know, but it clearly stands out among the president's relationships, most of which seem to be pretty distant and pretty cold.
But is it as bad as it is to even be speculating about the patriotism or the loyalty of the president of the United States and the extent to which he may be compromised by a hostile foreign power and with some kind of undisclosed relationship with Vladimir Putin. That's unprecedented and as bad as you can imagine, that the fact that we even have to think about this kind of Manchurian candidate scenario that's out there. But what I find even worse and more inexplicable is why are the Republicans going along with this? Why did those Republican senators have that meeting on the 4th of July in Moscow at which the foreign minister of Russia, Lavrov, said it was one of the best meetings he ever had and it was just absolutely great? And you just said that the meetings in Trump's about to have with NATO are not going to be great based upon what happened at the G7. So there you have it. What's going on?
You know, I don't want to jump the gun. I don't want to talk about the Mueller investigation because we just don't know what went on. We know that some people have been indicted that were close to Trump. We know that there were contacts between the Trump campaign and the Russians. But exactly what kind of evidence will come forth of collusion or financial wrongdoing, we simply don't know. And you know, so I'm not going to kind of go down that road. But his desire to have a close relationship with Putin clearly suggests that something strange is going on. And as you suggested, he has really moved the needle when it comes to the Republican Party. If you look at Republican public opinion surveys, Americans that are Republicans all of a sudden have a positive view of Russia. And that started during the campaign. And now you have, as you mentioned, these Republican senators who are going off to Russia. And this is in stark contrast to a party that has historically been quite Russophobic and quite hard on Russia. And I find this to be one of the most disconcerting aspects of American politics right now, because, you know, you can say that President Trump was an accident, Hillary Clinton wasn't a great candidate, the Russians interfered, yada, 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 right? So we ended up with a president who's unfit for the job. But to have a Republican Party that is putting up with this president, that is essentially lying down and taking behavior that is illiberal, behavior that treats the free media as the enemy of the state, behavior that demeans truth and the practice of liberal democracy. You know, the fact that the Republicans are just staring at their feet throughout this is really very, very disconcerting, because in the end of the day, it suggests that the party has essentially been captured by its own self-political interest rather than looking out for the interests of the nation as a whole.
So just to finish up on the strange meeting of the eight Republican senators in Moscow on the 4th of July with a group of senior Russian officials led by Foreign Secretary Lavrov. There was also the Duma member, very hawkish nowadays, I used to know him years ago, Vyacheslav Nikolov, and Slava Nikolov now has become quite a hawk. He said the meeting with the American lawmakers is one of the easiest ones of my life. Kislyak, the former Russian ambassador to Washington, said that they told the eight Republican congressmen things that they'd never heard before, that our guests heard rather clearly and distinctly, that Russia did not interfere in the U.S. elections. And, of course, that was echoed recently by Donald Trump in a tweet where he said Russia continues to say they had nothing to do with meddling in our elections. So, again, you can't dismiss this as naivety. I mean, President Putin lies about the Malaysian airliners, about the Green Men, about the invasion of Ukraine, about the use of chemical weapons in Syria, about Russian military killing civilians in Syria. I could go on. So why this sudden belief in the veracity of Russia's claim that they had nothing to do with meddling in our elections, when all of the American intelligence agencies say that they did?
Yeah. I think that Trump is right, that the world would be a safer place if the United States had a good relationship with Russia. Russia's got lots of nuclear weapons. Russia is not a global power like the United States is. It's on the way down, not on the way up in terms of its economy and its demographics. But the problem is that for that better relationship to emerge, the Russians have to change their tune. And you gave the laundry list of bad behavior, but on Ukraine, on Syria, on the question of interfering in Western elections, on basic facts and dealing with the world as it is, not in some make-believe la-la land, the Russians just are not a serious partner right now. And why the Republicans as a whole, or the president specifically, aren't willing to face up to that is odd. I would point out, though, just as one piece of evidence on the other side of the ledger, that the Congress did pass legislation with Republican support that hems the president in on sanctions against Russia. You may recall that the president was dragging his feet on applying sanctions for Russian interference in the election. So Congress went ahead and said, one, you can't remove sanctions without our permission. Two, we want you to move ahead with sanctions. Trump then dragged his feet for months, but eventually did impose some sanctions. But now he seems to be circling back and returning to this odd policy of pretending to be Vladimir Putin's best friend.
But in doing so, he's also not pretending, but he's openly critical of Angela Merkel, who arguably is the linchpin. Germany is the linchpin of NATO. He's sent in a very hostile sort of Tea Party type right wing ambassador who's making to Germany, who's making overtures to the AfD, the neo-Nazi kind of right-wing party that's emerged out of nowhere. Trump's taking the opposite position that Merkel is taking on immigration, and she's very vulnerable on that. And on top of that, of course, he's saying that we won't have Germany's back, essentially, threatening to either pull American troops out or pull funding out from NATO. So you have to add that, surely. That's the part of the puzzle that's even more bizarre.
You know, over the last month or two, I've begun to arrive at the conclusion that Trump may be more ideological than we think. You know, at first, many of us said, well, the adult in the room will prevail. That didn't happen. Then we said, you know, he's just a transactionalist and he's driving hard bargains on NATO or on trade because he thinks that we need a better deal. Not, you know, that's not unreasonable. But now he is making such a hash of our relationships with our key allies that I've come around to the view that he actually has a visceral antipathy to Europe, with the exception of European governments that have gone in a populist, nativist, nationalist direction. So what we might be seeing is that he likes Putin because Putin believes that the West means a white Christian West. He likes Poland because Poland now has a government that has become illiberal and has passed legislation saying, what, Poland? We didn't have anything to do with the Holocaust. Viktor Orban is going after George Soros, a kind of undercurrent of anti-Semitism, a pro-white Western Christian nativism. Trump is drawn to that. And I think he sees Merkel and Macron and most West Europeans as too liberal, too multicultural. And so I think part of the explanation for the fact that he's giving the back of his hand to the German leader, but seems to want to embrace the leaders of places like Poland, Russia, and now Italy, which has a populist government, I think we're seeing a more ideological side of the president than we did earlier. And it may have something to do with the fact that we're heading into the midterms. He thinks his best play is to double down and rally his base. And frankly, he may be right, because I don't think he has any other tricks up his sleeve.
Well, in rallying his base with nativism and xenophobia, but just to try and get some clarity on this, my understanding, and you've dealt with these politicians like presidents at the level of politician to politician, when they meet with other world leaders, isn't there a kind of natural camaraderie amongst political leaders? You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. They help each other as politicians. They always have nice communiques as they finish up summits that are beneficial to both sides. That's just my understanding of the way the game has been played up until now. But this president we have now does the opposite. He actually attacks foreign leaders that have been our longest standing allies and undermines their political security, as he is doing now with Merkel. I mean, she's hanging by a thread, and he's helping the opposition. That's never happened before, from what I can tell.
It's certainly not in my political lifetime. And you're right to say that normally when a president sits down with a counterpart or in a big meeting like the NATO summit, you have an agenda, you work through the agenda. The main goal is to arrive at a consensus and to demonstrate solidarity. Trump's main goal is the opposite. He goes in to break China. he goes in to alienate allies. He doesn't really process information in the same way that his predecessors have, where they work through issues and try to find a solution. And you know, he also, I think, treats people pretty shabbily. There was a report that came out of the summit, the G7 summit in Canada, that he threw some candy at Chancellor Merkel of Germany and said to her, "Hey, Angela, don't tell me that I never give you anything." So we're dealing with a president who has broken the mold, who doesn't sit down and go over the issues in detail, and frankly, who makes decisions at the spur of the moment in a way that even his closest advisors find perplexing. I think, for example, when he met with Kim Jong-un, he canceled U.S. exercises with South Korea on the peninsula, and everybody, the Pentagon, the National Security Advisor, the State Department, they all had whiplash. They said, where did that come from? And so you never know what you're going to get when the president is in a bilateral or a multilateral meeting, because he doesn't go by the briefing book.
Well, I must say, tossing candy at Angela Merkel sounds like Trump tossing paper towels down when he visited Puerto Rico after the devastating hurricane. It's such a humiliating thing to do. That's just breathtaking. I'd never heard that before. Charles Kupchan, I thank you for joining us. I hope it's not going to be as bad as we think, but I take it that the European leaders are extremely nervous about this upcoming NATO summit.
It's going to be a bouncy week. We should all fasten our seatbelts.
Well, again, I thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Charles Kupchan, who is Director for European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He's now a professor of international affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and he spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as special assistant to President Obama for national security, and he's the author of Power in Transition, The Peaceful Change of International Order, and How Enemies Become Friends, The Sources of Stable Peace. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Martis. I'd like to thank producers Graham Fitzgibbon and Alejandra Larriva-Latt. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.